This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
This is Ksuvus Memtes Amud Aleph and Beis, 49 A and B. Memtet Amud Aleph and Beis. And I'm just going to learn through this Gemara with you and highlight some issues. I'm busy moving house. I'm actually without Sforim right now, so all we've got is the Gemara. So the Gemara is pretty good. We'll have to Memtes Amud Aleph and Beis. The Mishnah, we're starting with a Mishnah in the middle of that page, and the Mishnah opens with a strange statement. It's strange from a number of perspectives. Ha'av eino chayev b'mzonos bito, and a father is not obligated to provide food for his child, his daughter. That's the first statement. Memtes amud aleph, correct? And Tess on the other 49A in the middle of the page, Mishnah. So that's the opening phrase. Ha'av eino chayev b'mzonos bito. So there are a few things that are strange about that statement. The first thing is, and what about the son? Does that mean you are obligated to support a son, just not a daughter? What does it mean, all children? And if it means all children, why doesn't it say all children? Why the distinction between son and daughter? And what does that mean he's not obligated to? He's not morally obligated to? He's not legally obligated to? The child can't claim support? What does it really mean? Ze medrash dorash Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lifnei chachomim bekeren biyavne. This is one of the sources. Keren biyavne is now a flourishing yeshiva. Keren biyavne used to be, it was called Kerem because the Chachamim used to sit in rows like a vineyard. That's why it was called Kerem B'Yavne. That's why the yeshiva today is called. So it's like the vineyard in Yavne, but it wasn't a vineyard. It was a yeshiva. It wasn't about making wine. It was about a yeshiva. And the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed as the Nasi, you remember he was a very young man when that happened. This is what he was learning with it. And he said, Habonim yirshu v'habonos yizoinu. There were two takonas, two laws that the Beis Din made with respect to the conditions of the of a woman's ksuba. The two conditions are, among them, these were two specific conditions, that in the event that the wife predeceases the husband, the children, her children, inherit the rights to the ksuba. So a ksuba is an asset in the hands of the woman that is transferable by inheritance to her children. It's not only something for herself, she has the capacity to, what's the word, to cause, to inherit, to testate, sorry. Bequeath is when you actually write it in the will. She doesn't have to write it in the will. They naturally have rights to the woman's ksuba. So, although they have rights to everything, if the mother's died and the father's died, they are now heirs, but there could be children from another wife who all inherit equally in the father's property, other than the ksuba of the first wife, or the second wife, whoever it was who died, they get that ksuba amount over and above their share of the estate. Now, today the ksuba amount is often just a nominal amount because we kind of allow the law of the country to take the place of the ksuba. But a ksuba normally, and sometimes in Israel still today, is a significant amount of money. So the children get that money. The habonos yizoinu. The sons get inherit. The daughters don't inherit from the ksuba, but they have to be supported by the father's estate. From the father's estate, the daughters have a right to be supported. This is not, it's not so fantastic. It's only until the age of 12 and a half. Then they've got to go and fend for themselves. Theoretically. Now we're talking about just the pure halachic requirements, and one of the reasons that we chose this Gemara because it's in the current Daf Yomi, it's a little while back. But one of the reasons I was interested in this Gemara is because it explores the difference between what is required by decency and what is required by law. And it exposes the fact that there are cases where there are requirements of common decency that the Torah doesn't mandate. Which is interesting. That means the Torah assumes that we're decent, and the laws are not made for decency. The laws go beyond that. Either they go to protect people in certain situations, and they go beyond decency. So we'll explore that a little bit. But we see here that although in any civilized nation, fathers would take care of their children, certainly young children, the Mishnah is quite jarring in its statement of the actual legal requirements. But anyway, what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah taught was that Ma habonim enan yoshim el achamisas ha'av. What did the statement just say? The sons inherit and the daughters get supported. When do the sons inherit? After the father dies. Therefore, when have daughters got a right to support? Only when the father has died. Now that is also interesting. So I understand where we get it from. We get it from the parallelism between the law of inheritance and the law of support. And they're stated together in one package. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah taught in that first day in the yeshiva, he taught that in the same way as the rights to inheritance that the sons have applies only when the father dies, so the rights to support that the daughters get applies only after the father dies. But, so what does that mean? What do the sons have to do while the father's alive? They probably have to work. They can't claim support from the father. And what do the daughters do also until the father dies? Let's get into the Gemara a little bit, and then we'll try and unravel some of it. The first comment that the Gemara says is "Bibzonis bitohu de'en chayev abibzonis binoy chayev." Are you telling me that it's the daughter that he doesn't have to? He's not obligated to support, but a son he is. Or not as a question, this is a statement. It seems from the Mishnah that a daughter has no claims of support from her father, but a son does. Otherwise, it would say children. It would say son and daughter. Since the Mishnah is specific about daughter, it would seem to imply that the son does have a right to support. Says the Gemara, no, that's not necessarily so. Bito nami chova hu deleko hamitzvike. And even in the case of the daughter, all it says is a father is not obligated to support his daughter. And now the Gemara says something very important for us to understand. He's not obligated. Chova hu deleko for mitzvah ikar. It's not an obligation, but it is a mitzvah. So we're getting a clarification of the word mitzvah. Mitzvah is a word used very, very lightly. And when we use words loosely, they lose their meaning and they lose their clarity. So we say a mitzvah. What is a mitzvah? A person does a chesed. It's a mitzvah. A person gives tzedakah. It's a mitzvah. A person... What do we mean by a mitzvah? What does it mean? So what we see right here, the first thing the Gemara clarifies the distinction between is chayva and mitzvah. There's a difference between an obligation and a mitzvah. Not everything that is a mitzvah is an obligation, we now learn. Something can be a mitzvah and you're not obligated. What would be an example? What's a mitzvah that you're not obligated to do?
A woman learning Torah.
A woman learning Torah, so that would be a question whether it's even a mitzvah. So we're going to have to work out if some of those cases are even mitzvahs, because that's in a third level. So now you've got a level of things you're allowed to do, things that are mitzvahs, and things that are chova, that you're obligated to do. At least three different categories, plus things you're not allowed to do, which is the fourth category. We'll leave that out of the picture for the meantime. But there's a distinction between chova and mitzvah. And in this case, we're saying there is no chova to support a child, but there is a mitzvah. Let's see what that means. Then the Gemara goes into a fairly complicated analysis. It's not that complicated, but just a detailed analysis of who the author of this mitzvah, this Mishnah, could be, because it doesn't appear to be like any of the three authorities on the subject. There are three authorities that have made statements on the subject, and they all seem to deviate from the Mishnah's view. So the Gemara starts off by trying to align the Mishnah's view with each of those three views and shows that they're unaligned. The Gemara then goes and says, in fact, we could align it with any of those three views if you translate the Mishnah correctly. So it could be any of them. So let's go through that. If you follow it, it's that's great. Mani Masnissen, who is the author of the Mishnah? And then when we've done this, we'll do a little bit of unraveling. Lo Rabbi Meir, lo Rabbi Yehuda, lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha. It's none of the three authorities. It's not Rabbi Meir, it's not Rabbi Yehuda, and it's not Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha. Why? What did they say? The Tanya, who we learned. Mitzvah lo zunis habonis. Here we'll see, by the way, one of the reasons this part of the Gemara is so important is not only the attempt to align the authority, but we see the full spectrum of halachic viewpoint on the subject, which is important. That's part of the things we do with Gemara that you miss when you learn halacha. If you just learn halacha, you learn Mishnah Brura, you learn Shulchan Aruch, you learn Rambam, you just get a bottom line. If you've only got a bottom line, you've got no flexibility. You don't understand where that bottom line fits in the spectrum. And that's when you get fundamentalism, whether it's Jewish religious fundamentalism or fundamentalism of any other religion. Other religions are fundamentalists because they don't have a spectrum. It's all black and white. They don't have a Gemara. So it's all black and white. If it's all black and white, they're right. It's fundamentalist. There's no compromise. There's no room for adjustment. There's no room for accommodation. It's either yes or no. But that's not Torah. Torah, we've got a whole Gemara, and the reason the Gemara is so important is because it gives us a full view of halachic possibility. So that even if the halachic decision is at a certain point in that spectrum, there are abilities to navigate within the spectrum under certain circumstances, and that's what poskim are doing all the time. And that's why Gemara is so critical to an understanding of Yiddishkeit. Well, we always say a person who is not learning Gemara, who doesn't have access to Gemara, can't possibly understand what the religion is all about. It can't make sense. To me, it is the most wonderful thing that Jewish people keep the Torah even though they don't learn Gemara. I can't understand it. I just marvel at it. It's just blind faith. They just believe that this is God's will and the rabbis tell them and they do. And it's just amazing. It's just incredible. Because it can't make any sense. It's totally rigid. It's not rational. It's sometimes not even normal. And people just do it. But with Gemara, it becomes normal. It starts making sense. You begin to understand it. You see where it all comes from and how it all fits together. How come it must be such torment to be to live a Jewish life and not be learning Gemara? It must be such torment. I marvel at people who can do it. I couldn't do it. Learning Gemara is an absolute necessity for my survival. Otherwise, it would be a question of whether I could remain faithful to the Torah altogether. So here we see the spectrum. Well, so far we've had a statement. Imagine that statement was in the Shulchan Aruch. It isn't. But imagine it was, and we were learning halacha. Ha'av ein chayv b'mitzvos Peter. A father doesn't have to support a daughter. Then the next paragraph. What would that look like? But that's what Shulchan Aruch does look like. Can't do this, can do this, should do this, shouldn't do this. And well, that's what it is. And we kind of go along with it. But now we go into trying to figure out what is the parameter. Well, let's look at the three different views and then see where the Mishnah fits in. So what do we have? The Tanya we've learned. Mitzvah lozonis habonis. Kavachayim labonim. It is a mitzvah to support daughters and even more so sons. Why? De'aski b'Torah. Because they're studying Torah. We don't want the sons to go and earn a living when they're young. We want them to be learning Torah. So if it's a mitzvah to support daughters who could well go out and earn a living, certainly it's a mitzvah to support sons who we don't want to go out to earn a living. We want them to be mastering the skills of learning. Otherwise, what will happen to Torah? So it makes good sense. If it's a mitzvah to support your daughter, certainly you have to support your son. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So what does Rabbi Meir hold? Boy and girl are equal. There's no chiyuv. There's a mitzvah. Is that aligned with the Mishnah or misaligned with the Mishnah? What does the Mishnah hold? Boy and girls are not equal. They neither have a chiyuv, but one has a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah for a boy, not for a girl. So it's not Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mitzvah lozunis habonim, bekava chayva labonis. Rabbi Yehuda says exactly the reverse. It's a mitzvah to, he also says, there's no chayva, no obligation. It's a mitzvah to support the sons, how much more so the daughters. Why would you think this is logic? He's got an opposite logic. Why would you say that? What do you think he said? The Gemara tells us in the next words, Mishum Zilusa, because it's an embarrassment for a girl to have to go and raise money and collect money. How can you do that? A boy can do that. Go if you can't find it. Can't make a living, you'll go and ask for tzedakah. But you don't put your girls on the street. So isn't that interesting how you've got they're both logic. Both are using kal vachomer. Both are using absolutely rational extrapolation and reach opposite conclusions. That's the beauty of Gemara. You can have two chachamim with two viewpoints, both using Torah logic, reaching opposite opinions. It doesn't make a big difference in halacha because it comes out that there's a mitzvah for both boy and girl. But the kavachomer is different. The one says the bigger mitzvah is for the boy and the other says the bigger mitzvah is for the girl. And their different approach, what is their different approach is, do you base it on supporting the boy because you want him to be learning Torah, or do you base it on the embarrassment? It's just different sensitivities. Are you looking at the needs of the of education, or are you looking at the suffering of embarrassment and cheapening the woman? Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika
says the third view: Chayva lozunis habonis la'achar misas aviyah.
There is an obligation to support a daughter after this father dies. Well, we know that. But there's no mitzvah, no chayva. There's nothing. You don't have to do anything while the father's alive. That's interesting also. Why do you think the Torah? The Torah is, I've often said to you that it would be easier for to me to believe in no God than a foolish God. It would be easier for me to be an atheist than to think that the revolution is not intelligent, that's for sure. What is the revolution's intention in saying a son and daughter get supported after the father dies, or the daughter in this case gets supported after the father dies? While he's alive, they must work. Shouldn't it be the other way around? While he's alive, he can support him. When he dies, they might have to go out to work. No. When he dies, they can get an inheritance. While he's alive, they must go out to work.
The father is obligated, but he can get around his obligations. It's his responsibility. But the Torah will speak for him when he cannot speak for himself and exercise his
power. Yeah, but Yochanan Breker says he doesn't even have his responsibility, doesn't he?
No, it's different, isn't it? He does have responsibility, but he's got the ability to not do what he's supposed to do. But he should be supporting his kids.
No, Rabbi Yochanan Breker says he doesn't have to. Only after the death. And it's interesting that the Torah doesn't require
him. He doesn't have to. But doesn't the Gemara say that he should?
No, that's the ones who hold that it's a mitzvah. But Rabbi Yochanan Breker doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So
maybe he holds that maybe he's coming from the perspective that a father will
do it in any event. But that we can assume that a father will do that. Whereas once he's died, we've got to take care of her. So let's play with that idea still. Says the Gemara, Mani Masnisin, who is the Mishnah? E Rabbi Meir ho amar boni mitzvah. Can't be Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir says there's a mitzvah to support sons. E Rabbi Yehuda ho amar boni nami mitzvah. If it's Rabbi Yehuda, he says that the son's also a mitzvah. E Rabbi Yochanan Breika afilu mitzvah nami leke. If it's Rabbi Yochanan Breika, there's not even a mitzvah. Nothing. The father gets no merit at all for supporting the sons. Does that make sense? A father supports his children, works hard, deprives himself of things that he might want or need, and the children go on and become great or whatever, and there's no, that's not even a mitzvah. So we've got to have clear understanding of what that word mitzvah means. Ibayisem answers the Gemara, Ibayisem Rabbi Meir, Ibayisem Rabbi Yehuda, Ibayisem Rabbi Yochanan Breker. You can actually, by rephrasing, understanding the Mishnah a little bit differently, you could put the Mishnah, align the Mishnah with any of these three views. Ibayisem Rabbi Meir, it could be Rabbi Meir. What did Rabbi Meir say? What was Rabbi Meir's view, do you remember? Rabbi Meir said it's a mitzvah for the daughters, and even more so for the sons. So how would you learn the Mishnah? The Mishnah says the father doesn't have to, is not mechuyev to support his daughters. Implying, he's not chayev bin zonis bitter, but what about his son? He is chayev, implies a chiyuv. And Rabbi Meir says no chiyuv, only mitzvah. Says the Gemara, we can figure it out. This is how you've got to learn the Mishnah. The fact is, he's not chayv for his son either. But a mitzvah applies to both of them. There's no chayv for either, there's no mitzvah, but there is a mitzvah for both. So then why say bitter? Why say daughter? Say children. Hokam Ashman comes to tell you. To tell you, even the daughter, where there's a fear of zilusa, of embarrassment, there's a mitzvah but not a chayva. There's not a chayva, but there is a mitzvah. Okay, we'll discuss what mitzvah means and what chayva means. He buys him Rabbi Yehuda v'achikom v'arvin chad was in his bitter because chen livnoi or mitzvah livnoi ikar. Rabbi, this is the opposite of Rabbi Yehuda. He says a father is not chayiv to support his daughter, and he's not chayiv to support his son, but there's a mitzvah for his son, ikev, a kavachom elabonis, and also for the daughter, v'hodit hanibitoi. Why does it say daughter? Or kamashmalan da'afilu bitoi chayiv. that you shouldn't think that there's not a chayva for chayvut lekov, that you shouldn't think that for the daughter there's a chayva, an obligation because of zilusa. No, there's no obligation. The son is important because of learning Torah, and the daughter is important because of zilusa, because of embarrassment and degradation, and they're equal. Those two reasonings are equal. You've got a mitzvah to support a son so that he can learn Torah, a mitzvah to support a daughter that she can not be embarrassed and degraded, and they're equal, and they're equal. Not chiyuv, but mitzvah. V'paisem Rabbi Yochanan ben Brekhe, can even say it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Brekhe, but hachi kama, then you're going to read the Mishnah this way. You're not obligated to support your daughter, nor your son. There's not even a mitzvah. And because the Mishnah continues to talk about the obligations to support the daughter after the father dies, the Mishnah stylistically uses the word chayva, but there's no chayva. And ein chayv means potter, in other words, there's no obligation. Read it as no obligation. So you can navigate the Mishnah according to any of the three views, and we can't reach any conclusion out of that. But what the Gemara has done meanwhile is given us the range of view. There is a view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broika that there's not even a mitzvah. There's a view of both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda that there's a mitzvah. One holds more so for the son and one holds more so for the daughter. That's the range. And there's nobody who says there's a chayva. Nobody who says there's an obligation. That's interesting. Nobody says, there is not a view that says a father has, and we're talking about a child of under 12 and a half. There is not a view that says there is an obligation on a father to support his children under the age of 12 and a half. There's one view that says a son, yes. Omar Rabbi Elo, Omar Reish Lakish. It's a little bit more Gemara than we'll talk. Says Rabbi Elo in the name of Reish Lakish, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Hanina, but Usho Hitkinu. In Usho, the Sanhedrin had to move out of Yerushalayim, and it sat in various different places. One of the places it sat was in Usho. And while the Sanhedrin was in Usho, they made a law, they legislated. Shehei Odov Zanis Bonov Is Benosuf Shen Ktanim. They obligated parents to support children when they're young. Ibayeluhu, the Gemara asks, Hilchus HaKavaseh or any Hilchus HaKavaseh? Are we sure of this? Do we hold like Rabbi Elo that law was in fact made? Says the Gemara, no, we don't actually hold that law was made. We'll bring you proofs. Toshman, the Gemara brings a few case studies. Ki havatu lekameh d'Rav Yehuda, when a case used to come before Rav Yehuda, who lived after the time of Usha, Omar Luhu, where a father would not support a son or a child, he would say to them, Yaroid Yoldo v'abnei mato shadyo. A yaroid is a kind of an animal that doesn't feed its children, or that resents feeding its children. It's young. We don't know exactly what kind of animal it is, kind of a bird or kind of an animal. We're not sure exactly what it is. There are different views. But it's an animal that resents feeding its children, and when it feeds the children, it doesn't even look at the child because it kind of turns away when it's feeding the child. It kind of resentfully feels that it feeds the child, the baby. And Rabbi Yehuda would say to this person, even a yarud, that cruel animal that doesn't want to look at the child in the face, but it does feed the child. And you're worse than a yarud? So by the fact that he said that, we learn that the halacha is not that they made the law in Usha. Why do you think that is? Yeah, he would, otherwise he would just say, this is the halacha, call the police. There's no, attach his accounts, do whatever, to try and use this kind of method. Clearly that's not the halacha. Ki avatu lekamid Rav Chista Omer Luhu, when they used to come before Rav Chista, they used to say, katu le asito b'tzibura v'leikim v'leima uva boi bane, v'ho gabe loi boi bane. Turn one of these mills, these kind of bowls that they, what do they call those big bowls that they would mill the flour in? Turn it upside down, this kind of grinding bowl. Turn it upside down, the basin, upside down, and make him stand on it so that the whole community can see him, and make him say, I'm worse than a raven. That's what he should say, because the ravens are cruel to their children, even the raven feeds the kids, and I don't. Ask the Gemara of Uva Boi Boni. Does a raven actually take care of its children? We say in Tehillim, about that Hashem is kind to the son, the children of the raven when they call out, implying that the parents don't take care of them. very important piece of Gemara, believe it or not. Gemara says that the one is talking about white ravens and the other is black ravens. Tosfos says two different types of birds. There's a black raven that is cruel, there's a white raven that isn't. Rashi says there are two different stages. When the bird is born, it's white and it gets black later on. And when it's white, the parents don't recognize it as a child and don't feed it, and later on they become kind to it. So it's during that time that it's white. When they used to come before Rava, Rava would say to the person, are you comfortable that your children should be supported by community, by communal stocker? What do you feel about that? So you see that that's not the halacha. They're just using social pressure and emotional pressure, but it's not halacha. And this is only talking about where the man is not wealthy. But if he's wealthy, we force him. We attach his accounts, we make him pay. Kihod Rav Kafil Rav Nosson Bar Ami, like Rav forced Rav Nosson Bar Ami the Apik Mine Dalid Me Azuzu Litzdoke and forced him to give 400 zuz to Tzedoke. Now that's also an important statement. What does that mean? And forced him to give 400 zuz to Tzedoke? That's Tzedoke. Here we're talking about children. So we'll analyze that as well. I just want to point out something in Tosfos before we analyze the top Tosfos of the page. That's the right hand column of Rashi's script. Kishem Ketanim, Aba Ketane Ketanim, says Rashi, Lekula al Tosfos, Lekula al Mechayev. Very small children, he is obligated. So Gemara further on in the Masechta, on Daf Samach Hei, that a child under the age of 6, a parent is obligated to support. So you can't put your kids out on the street under the age of 6. From 6 you can send them out to earn a living, but not before the age of 6, you're obligated to take care of them. Let's pause there a moment and try and analyze and understand. So what is this Gemara about? What are we meant to take from this Gemara? What are we meant to learn from this Gemara? The Torah comes along, and from the Torah's legislative perspective, you're obligated to support an under 6-year-old, you're not obligated to support an over 6-year-old. But if you do, it's a mitzvah. And society frowns on a parent who doesn't. So why isn't it in the Torah? So the first thing that this makes clear is there are lots of things that aren't written in the Torah that we're obligated to do.
Common sense.
It's not only there's common sense, there's a basic morality. Not everything that is not in the Torah is not morally expected of us. There is a body of behaviors that are not halachically legislated, but are expected. So very often you'll find a frum person will say, where does it say so in Shulchan Aruch? The answer is it doesn't need to say so in Shulchan Aruch. There are lots of things it doesn't need to say in Shulchan Aruch. That human beings are given the capacity to know what's right and wrong. You don't need Shulchan Aruch for everything. In fact, if we go all the way back, I remember I was once discussing something with a colleague of mine in South Africa, and I said, you know, son, they're asking where's the source for this? Have you ever seen a source for that? And his answer to me was, and where's the source that you're not allowed to kick a sefer Torah? Where does it say in the Shulchan Aruch that you can't kick a sefer Torah? But you know you can't kick a sefer Torah. Nobody doesn't think you can. It doesn't say anywhere. You're not allowed to kick a sefer Torah. There's some things that are so obvious you don't need Shulchan Aruch for it. But we start getting very, very dependent on instruction, and we lose all capacity to use our intuitive capability. It happens in all sorts of areas. It happens in areas outside of Torah. It happens in areas of health. We don't have a sense of what our bodies need and don't need, what we should be eating, what we shouldn't be eating. We've got to look at the contents and the calories and the thing and try and make an intellectual decision as to what we would be eating it or not. If we were in touch, we would know what we needed to eat and what we would have a sense. We would know how much sleep we need. We would have a sense, but we've lost that, so we need to be told. We need instructions. We need hechsherim on everything. If there's not a hechsher on a bottle of water, who knows, maybe it isn't kosher. Because we don't have any common sense of what is and what isn't it. We become completely right. It's in fashion. It's got to have a label on it. If it doesn't have a label that some fashion expert says, this is nice, this is good, you can wear this and feel okay. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't feel okay. Because we don't trust our own intuition. We get designers to design our homes because we don't know what's nice and what isn't. They come in and they say, you should have this color and that color. They should, oh, good, thank you. Now we know our home's okay. So we've lost all capability to make judgments, normal judgments that human beings should be able to make. And it's the same in the area of morality. When people start expecting morality to be legislated, and if it's not legislated, they assume it's not necessarily morally required, that we learn in this piece of Gemara is not so. there's a whole body of behaviors that is not legislated in the Torah that is expected. And one of them is, you don't have to support your children. So when somebody says to you, where does it say in Shulchan Aruch, you can say to them, and where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that you should support your children? Does that mean you put them on the street? No, it doesn't. So where does that law come from that you have to? It comes from common sense. You don't need the Torah for that. And the fact that they had to make that law in Usho is a sign of social decadence, not of social evolution. When a society has to make laws, that's a sign that we're slipping. That's not a sign that we're getting there. It shouldn't be necessary to have those laws. It shouldn't be necessary to say, if you do this, this will be the thing. Yeah, it kind of is necessary because we're dealing with a big and a diverse society. But it's not great when Congress has to say, let's introduce a new law to cover such a thing. What's happened? Why are they doing it? Why didn't they do it last year? Why didn't they do it 10 years ago? Because 10 years ago, people kind of knew it. And now there's a need to introduce it. That's what starts to happen. And sometimes, not sometimes, law evolves because, so you could take laws of racism. But that too, it's the fact that you've got to legislate laws against racism means that people, without those laws, would act in ways that are racist. That's a problem. So we understand that. There is a body of law that, there's a body of behavior that isn't legislated by the Torah, but is expected by the Torah. That's called mitzvah. A mitzvah, in this, again, mitzvah can mean many things, but from the purpose of this, when we're getting very accurate in defining, a chiyuv is something legislated. Mitzvah is something you're required to do, but it is not legislated. Now, tzedakah is an interesting area. What happens with tzedakah? Is tzedakah legislated or expected? Is it a mitzvah or is it a chiyuv? What is
legislated? That's in the Torah.
Where is it in the
Torah?
That says you should tithe 10%. That's trumas and maaser. That's giving money to the kohen and the levy. But that's not giving. That's not giving. That's not giving tzedakah. It doesn't say that you have to give 10% to tzedakah. That it doesn't say. What it does say is you need to be generous. Don't hold back. Yeah. Take care of the people. You know, there are general statements, but it doesn't say. Normally, the Torah is very specific. If the Torah wants you to bring a certain korban, it doesn't say, don't hold back. It says, this is the animal, this is its age, this is how you do it. It's very, very specific. Why aren't we specific about tzedakah? This is the percentage you must give, this is the type of people you must give it to. This is kind of a general background statement that generally you must be generous, generally you must give, you must not hold back. Why is the Torah such a... When the Torah gets into that kind of vague area, we're dealing with mitzvah, not with chovah. Now the difference between mitzvah and chovah is considered trumas and maisis. Giving a tithe is like a tax. So a tax is, even though it's going to good purposes and not supporting the elderly and doing all sorts of good things, but if you don't pay, you go to jail. That's a chovah. There's a consequence, there's a potential punishment for not doing it. That's a chovah. A mitzvah is the Torah wants you to do it, but it's not legislated together with consequence. So tzedakah, I would argue, is a mitzvah rather than a chovah. Yes, the Jews have to give tzedakah, but it's not chovah like you have to keep Shabbos. If you don't keep Shabbos, what happens to you? Yeah, or skila. I mean, there's a death sentence over that. No Shabbos, no, this is serious stuff. If you eat chametz on Pesach, what happens to you?
Chorus.
No, chorus, serious stuff. If you don't give tzedakah, what happens to you? Who knows what happens? Sometime the Rebbeinu Shlomo will talk to you about it, and it's not good. And if you do give tzedakah, there's lots of bracha. And if you don't give tzedakah, there's not a lot of bracha. But it doesn't say I'll kill you if you don't give tzedakah. So therefore, I would put it as not as chovah, but as mitzvah. Yes, it's an expectation of the Torah, but it's not legislation of the Torah. Now let's take this a little bit further. I'll take questions as soon as I'm through. Let's take this a little bit further and say, okay, so why doesn't the Torah legislate a thing like this? And yeah, the one point was saying, maybe the Torah relies on the instinct of a parent to give a child. Why rely on the instinct? The Torah legislates you mustn't murder. It doesn't rely on the instinct that people don't generally go around murdering. It says, you murder, I'll kill you. You're not allowed to do that. It's very clear. We understand exactly what it is. Not left to instinct. Why doesn't the Torah legislate? You support your children, or we'll take the money from you, or we'll lock you up in jail, or we'll do whatever it is. Something so basic to civilization. Why would the Torah not legislate it? What do you think the reason could be? Why would the Torah not do it? I was puzzled when I learned this Gemara. Why would the Ribbono Shel Olam not legislate?
Limitation.
What's the limitation would be? So it becomes defined, and it becomes kept in the minds of people because the Torah caps it, and we don't want it to be kept. We want it to be. I think that's getting very close to what I was thinking. I was thinking the Torah wants to give every father the merit of doing tzedakah with every cent he spends on his children. Isn't that incredible? So when you come to Shemayim, a guy who's been mean, who never gave a cent to the community, who never did a kindness, he comes to Shemayim. He doesn't come without any merits on his generosity file. He'll come there, and Hashem will say, generosity. Gee, you've given. Do you know, by the way, how much it costs to raise a child? We talked about that. To raise in the United States, to raise a child is $1 million. To raise a child from infancy to university graduation is close to $1 million, over $900,000. That's another whole discussion, where people get that money from. It's an absolute miracle. Absolute miracle. There's no economic explanation as to how the average American household manages to raise children. It's not possible. It's an absolute missing. And I've done the exercise with people. They don't know where the money came from. It isn't there. It's not possible for the average household. But it happens. So if you can have a miracle with one child, you can have a miracle with two. You know, a miracle times 10 is not a bigger miracle than a miracle times one. That's why one can afford to have children, can't one? Because one can't afford to have one.
No.
So you have more than one at all. So it also works. Anyway, so it costs $1 million. So now you have a parent who has three children. And he comes to Shemayim and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I feel so embarrassed now that I see the truth. I never even gave charity. I never gave to the charitable causes. And he says, it's not right. I see $3 million to charity in your account. Imagine what that is. But Ribbono Shel Olam quietly puts away, it's almost as if he's putting away a quiet saving for us. But all the money we spend, if it was chayva, it wouldn't be charity. It would be tax. And that's why we see the case where Rava forced... Was it Rava forced Rav Nosson Bar Ami to pay out 400 zuz? Because that was a tax. The community got together and decided that everybody was going to put in a certain amount of money, and for whatever reason he was objecting, and they forced him. Once it's a tax, you don't get merit for it. And you get some merit for it. And if you don't get any merit, you get merit for everything. But it's not mitzvah. It's not mitzvah to do something that is forced. If it's a chiyuv, then you've got the merit of fulfilling your obligation. And that's one kind of merit. You've got to put on tefillin, you put on tefillin, that's a mitzvah. You've done what you're mechuyev to do. Kept Shabbos, you've done what you're mechuyev to do. You kept kashrus, you did what you're mechuyev to do. So that obviously is big merit. But there's another kind of merit, doing a mitzvah that was not legislated but is expected. That's called mitzvah. And there's enormous merit. So I would suggest that the Ribbono Shel Olam left this as a non-legislated obligation so as to afford the parent the schus of tzedakah for raising their children. And allows, and I think it ties it to what you're saying, Alex, in the sense that puts it into the category of generosity rather than tax. Nobody pays more tax than is legislated, so if the Torah would have taxed it, that's what we would have done. Torah doesn't, so people give the best of their hearts and they do give a lot more than they might otherwise have given, and that way they do it. But that leads us to one last question that we need to do before we take questions around the table, and that is, we say that Godola Mitzvah Vayisim Mimishi Eina Mitzvah Vayisim. If a person does something he's obligated to do, that's a bigger mitzvah than if he does something he's not obligated to do. So what would be, have been a greater kindness of Hashem? To legislate or to leave it open? To legislate. So then what's the big chesed to leave it open? If we didn't have that principle of God, then, so what's an example of that? An example would be, let's say, a woman doesn't have to sit in a sukkah, but she does. So who's got the greater mitzvah? The man who's obligated to do and sits, or the woman who isn't obligated to do and sits? The man sitting, fulfilling his obligation, is a greater mitzvah than the woman in that situation. So here too, if the Torah really wanted to be kind to the parent, then it comes back to the original question, and make it an obligation, so that supporting the children, you're fulfilling a chiyuv. Which leads me to the suggestion which I have not checked out. So this is, I'm saying this is an unchecked out suggestion. that the statement of Godol HaMetzuvah V'Oise Nimisha Eina Metzuvah V'Oise is specific. It's Metzuvah V'Oise, not Mechuyev V'Oise. There's a difference. If you're doing something that you're obligated to do, legislated, and you're doing it as mitzvah, then mitzvah is greater than legislated. If there's no mitzvah at all, then mitzvah is greater than nothing. So let's go through. It's not legislated that you have to eat in the sukkah. It's just legislated that you can't eat out of the sukkah a full meal. But there's no chiyuv, except for the first night, there's no chiyuv to eat in the sukkah. But it's a mitzvah. For a woman, it isn't even a mitzvah. You see the difference? First night sukkahs, there's a chiyuv. Thereafter, there's a mitzvah, but no chiyuv for men. And for women, it's not even a mitzvah. Does that mean that a woman can't sit in the sukkah? No. Does it mean that a woman gets no credit for sitting in the sukkah? No, she does. But what's more, Godol HaMetzuvah V'Oise, by performing a mitzvah, it's greater than by a non-mitzvah. But that's not the same for chiyuv. So, for example, the equation doesn't work with chiyuv. For example, if a person is chayuv to bring a korban, and another person brings a korban, they're two different things altogether. It's like comparing a person who pays his debts to somebody who gives charity. You can't compare them. You've got to pay your debts, and it's good to pay your debts, and it's bad not to pay your debts. How does that compare to somebody who gives charity? Well, somebody who doesn't pay their debt but gives charity, that's not so great. Somebody who pays their debt and gives charity, that is great. Somebody who pays their debt and doesn't give charity, it's like we would be comparing two very different things altogether. So, chiyuvim we should treat as one category, and then there's the other category of things which are not chiyuvim, not legislated. They're either mitzvah or permitted. We're talking about good things. We're not talking about bad things, and we're not talking about neutral things. We're talking about actions that are entirely voluntary, actions that are expected by the Torah but not legislated, and actions that are legislated. And I'm suggesting put the legislated actions in a separate area altogether. That's chiyuv. And chiyuv means that there's an indebtedness. You have to. It's a debt. It's literally a debt. When you have a chiyuv, and we use this in halacha many times, and I think we touched on it in an earlier shiur. The moment Ma'ariv time comes around, a man has a chiyuv to daven Ma'ariv. At that point, he has an indebtedness. And we should feel it that way. There's a debt on my shoulders. I have to discharge that debt. I discharge the debt by davening. I'm obligated to do so. Moment Yom Tov comes in, there's a chiyuv. That's chiyuv. There's an indebtedness and an obligation to discharge indebtedness. It doesn't even belong to me. I don't even have a right in it. It's just something I've got to do. That's chiyuv. Then there's the other whole area of good things that the Torah expects of us. Some are mitzvah and some are not mitzvah. It doesn't mean they're not good things, they're just not mitzvah. There we say, Godol HaMetzuvah V'Oise, Mimisha Eina Metzuvah V'Oise. So if, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broicha, he says supporting a child isn't even a mitzvah. It's a good thing, but it's not even a mitzvah. The others say, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir say, it is a mitzvah. It's not a chiyuv, but it's a mitzvah. And doing a mitzvah is the highest level. That means it's Godol HaMetzuvah V'Oise Mimisha Eina Metzuvah V'Oise. You're doing something that the Torah expects of you, but didn't legislate. The Torah expects you to make that decision without legislation. That's kind of the highest form of expectation. Torah legislate something, that's okay, but to do the mitzvah. So if you take the Torah before the time of Sinai, the time of Avraham Avinu, what was Avraham doing? Was it chiyuvim? Did he have chiyuvim? No. Bris Mila he had, that was it, he didn't have chiyuvim. Did he have mitzvahs? Absolutely he had mitzvahs. All the things that Avraham did, Avraham kept the whole Torah. He kept it as mitzvah, not as chiyuv. When did we get chiyuvim?
Sinai.
Sinai introduced chiyuvim. Until Sinai there was no chiyuv. Until Sinai, there was only mitzvah. That's what switched at Sinai. We were given chiyuvim, different category. Until then, it was all mitzvahs. And in a sense, that was a greater form of, from an individual perspective, that was greater. From a societal perspective, it wasn't, because too many people could opt out, and would have opted out, and probably were opting out. So the Torah legislates, gives a clock, the same as a society, legislates. But the greater time was with an Avraham, and a Yitzchak, and a Yaakov. That's why we say, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, and Elokei Yaakov. Why do we stop there? Why not Elokei Moshe, Elokei Aaron, Elokei David? As David asked, he should be included in that. So different kind of category. Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov get the entire Torah as mitzvah, not as chayva. And the Torah wants us to keep certain things as mitzvah, not as chayva. And one of the things the Torah wants us to keep still as mitzvah, not as chayva, is supporting our children. At least that act of charity should not be a tax. It should be something we do because we want to do, because it's right to do, because it's moral to do, and should leave us then with the capacity to be rewarded as becoming a mitzvah, as people who are performing a mitzvah rather than an obligation. Godel ha-mitzvah meis v'mishein ha-mitzvah meis, it's certainly a great mitzvah in doing so, and the Torah wants to leave us free to benefit from making that moral choice rather than having it legislated and obligated. So from a relatively easy piece of Gemara, with some strange statements that we have to probe, and in Gemara that's always an important thing, is to notice the strange things, to notice the odd things, and to mind them, and find out what there is. We get a much deeper understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam's intent, of the Torah's intent, in the way it legislates, and when it legislates, the fact that there are behaviors that are not legislated, but are expected. Those behaviors are called mitzvahs as opposed to chiyuvim, and that it's the supporting of children falls into that category of mitzvah rather than chiyuv. That's in a child over the age of six. Under the age of six, there isn't a chiyuv. There isn't a mitzvah. There is chiyuv. There's obligation rather than mitzvah. After the age of six, it's mitzvah. And the mitzvah thereafter, what is the nature of that mitzvah? What do we see from the Gemara further on? What mitzvah is it, supporting a child? It doesn't say anywhere, thou shalt support children. What mitzvah is it? Tzedakah. It's a mitzvah tzedakah. You're being the kind of mitzvah of tzedakah. And the important thing in the mitzvah of tzedakah is that charity starts at home. It's much easier sometimes for us to give charity to big causes, and we get give charity to the Simon Wiesenthal Center. You give enough, you get COVID. You give charity to your family, you get a whole lot of COVID for it. So sometimes it's easier. There are some people who give more charity to causes than they do to their close ones. And there's a chiyuv to give charity, and not just charity in money, to take care of our close ones, to nurture our close ones, to be attentive to it's sometimes easier to be attentive to the people who don't nag. And strangers don't nag, they come and they go. So it's easy to be attentive to them for a while and they disappear. But your family nags. They're there all the time. They need, they want, they have needs. The needs don't end. The needs don't stop. And sometimes we shut down the attentiveness, and that we shouldn't do. The chiyuv of tzedakah and chesed is much higher to those that are close to us than it is to anybody who's distant from us. So that's where we'll leave it. Take a bit of discussion and then move through. That's Anna.
On tzedakah.